1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great Saturday, even if it may be kind of a dark and gray Saturday. Maybe you're out, or maybe you were trying to go out to enjoy the Hangout Music Festival this weekend. If so, I hope you're able to, or I hope you're, if you're visiting Pensacola area to attend Hangout, welcome to our area. In any event, we're going to try to make your Saturday even better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so from the Pop Culture Knowledge channel on YouTube, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
In my experience, if there's one thing that makes music festivals just a little bit better, it's getting wet when you go. So just throwing that out there. Thanks for having me, Julio.
I mean, I've been to Hangout many, many times. I've covered Hangout many, many times. I have been at Hangout in the rain. We just kind of came up on 14 years since the first Hangout. It popped up in my Facebook memories the other day. And if those of us that remember that may remember that the last day of the first festival, it just absolutely poured. There was like an epic thunderstorm that came through to the extent that they closed the grounds and basically sent everybody out. And as my friend Phil Bailey likes to put it, you might die, but you're not dying here. Like it was very much a, we're not taking responsibility for what happens here. Get off the grounds.
No kidding. Yeah. I feel like Hangout Festival still feels like a relatively new kind of addition to our Gulf Coast area. So the fact that it's been nearly 15 years is wild.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had a couple of years there that we didn't have it, remember, because of COVID. So that's part of it. But yeah, that first year, it's really funny because the grounds just, like I said, they completely closed. I remember being in the media tent and like trying to huddle in, and everybody with their electronics that was covering the festival trying to huddle in away from the rain.
Oh,
just,
no.
Just watching the water rise. And it was it was like, oh, this is not good. But they closed the grounds. Everybody got off the grounds for a while, and then they opened back up. And Michael Franti and Spearhead took the stage. And I just remember, like, the skies cleared up and the sun came out and he was playing The Sound of Sunshine. And it was just like, it was such a cool moment.
Yeah, I love serendipitous moments like that. There was a time that I saw Garbage perform I'm Only Happy When It Rains as the bottom fell out of the sky of Voodoo Music Experience. So
oh, nice.
Similar, but opposite. But it is like so cool when something like that happens.
I want to give
a quick shout out to our listeners, Julio. We got to send some love out to all of you who are catching this over the airwaves, in addition to those of you who are listening to it on any of your various podcast streaming services. If you have any fun stories about music festivals that you've gone to that you want to share with us, email them to gopensacola@gmail.com. If they're good and they're fun and we think the listeners will like them, we'll make sure to read them out over the air. Also, if you have any suggestions for topics that you want to hear us discuss in future upcoming episodes, go ahead and leave us those suggestions as well, and we'll try our best to get around to them. But we do really want to say thank you to the listeners. Without that, we're just talking to each other, which we love to do as well. And if you only knew the kind of conversations that Julio and I have when we're not recording. So, anyways, just wanted to say shout out to everybody that hears this.
Well, and we've been talking about, you know, the possibility of doing a separate podcast that would be, you know, that what Jeremy was just saying. So if that's something you'd be interested in, then, you know, email us about that as well. You know, maybe we'll get a lot of people asking for it. Maybe we'll do it. You know, you never know.
Absolutely.
I wanted to say one more thing. You know, you're talking about those serendipitous occurrences of where music and weather collide.
Yeah.
And you can't talk about that without mentioning Prince at the Super Bowl, though.
Did Ain't Purple?
He's playing Purple Rain and the skies open up, man.
Oh, that's amazing.
It is the most iconic performance ever, without a doubt.
Definitely.
And, yeah.
Definitely the best.
Yeah. So you got to absolutely mention that. And, you know, while we're on the subject of football.
One of our favorite topics.
Yeah, you know, welcome to Sports Talk Go Pensacola. You know, that's something we talk about a lot here. But when football intersects with the culture, I think we got to mention it. And it has happened in a big way this week. The kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, the Super Bowl winning Kansas City Chiefs, the possibly most tied into pop culture football team there is right now, thanks to the fact that Travis Kelce, one of the players for the Kansas City Chiefs, is dating the most famous woman in the entire world, Taylor Swift, who, of course, you know, was at all the games and whatnot. But the kicker from this team was invited to give a commencement address at a university in Kansas. And, well, you know, it's kind of ironic when you're a kicker and you put your entire foot down your mouth.
What happened, man?
And that's what he did here. You know, he basically got up and, you know, told this graduating class, you know, of course, you know, like college graduating classes, about half men, about half women.
Tend to maybe even lean a little bit liberal at that stage in our lives.
Yeah. Got up and, you know, apparently this guy has some very deep-seated religious beliefs, and that's fine. I'm not knocking anybody for believing what they believe. But, you know, read the room a little bit, too. Maybe the best place to espouse your very conservative, a woman's places in the home beliefs is not in front of a graduating class. Women. You know, to get up there and basically say, you know, you're going to be a lot more fulfilled as wives and mothers and being homemakers than you're going to be in the career world. Wait for it. In the course of doing so, quoted Taylor Swift lyrics.
What song?
I can't remember, but it was only like three words, and it was like a, you know, one of these things that's like, oh, familiarity breeds contempt were the words. And you know, that's, you know, it's a pretty common phrase outside of Taylor Swift lyrics.
Sure.
But he mentioned her by name, as he said, as my teammate's girlfriend says, blah blah blah. You know, Taylor Swift's a pretty well known feminist.
Yeah.
And
you know,
I mean, her followers
talk a lot about
her followers are very much into the whole girl power kind of thing. So how do you think that guy's week on the internet's been?
I don't, where's the lie? That's what I'm saying. I'm just glad that somebody finally said out loud what we're all thinking, and that is that women belong in the kitchen, barefoot, and pregnant.
Views expressed by Jeremy Branch do not represent those of me or the station.
Oh, man, I'm just kidding. I think it's very brave of him. I got to give it up to him. In the face of adversity, authentically being himself, even when it's probably one of the worst things that you can be sometimes.
it was not a very smart decision. Let's put it that way. Of course, you know, the NFL has come out and distanced themselves from him. He's getting, you know, battered by Swifties. He's getting metaphorically kicked by Swifties all over the internet. Not just Swifties, but by women in general. You know, the Chiefs have been kind of weirdly quiet about it. Because I think they, you know, here's the thing though, man. Dude, you kick a ball for a living.
Yeah,
like you're not
you
even like
enough,
you're not even like a, you know, like a linebacker or a running back or something like that, where, or you know, somebody where there's some strategy to what you do. They put the ball on a little tee and you kick it. Or you know, you might have a punt, so you might have the ball in your hand and drop it and kick it. That's what you do. It's not the most cerebral career in the world. It's not the. It's not even like on a football field, a leadership position, or a position where you'd. You know, there's a lot of strategy involved. Maybe an onside kick. Maybe there's a strategy there. But you're not. You're not like the big manly tackle or something. I kind of feel like kickers are kind of a dime a dozen. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not the biggest football guy in the world, so. You know, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am wrong here. I do think we got to take a break there. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, that song just mentioned, we're going to talk about the X-Men. So that song mentions the two greatest X-Men there are. One of whom we get to see quite a lot in this series, Nightcrawler. And one of whom we got a very, very tiny little cameo of in the last episode, Kitty Pryde. Very, very much blink and you'll miss it. And actually not even really, we didn't even really see her. We saw a photo of her. But if you're eagle-eyed on the very last episode of X-Men 97, you did see a little glimpse of, Kitty Pryde, AKA Shadowcat. So, more of that. Hopefully we get to see Kitty in the next season, because there is going to be a next season of the show. I'm wondering if it's going to be continued to be called X-Men 97 or if they're going to go to X-Men 98 next season. But that's neither here nor there. We haven't talked about this series in a little while, Jeremy. I think we left off talking about it after the epic mid-season episode, Remember It. Does that sound right to you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember it?
I do indeed. Okay. Oh, yeah. Man, this whole series has been awesome and super memorable.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of interesting things going on with this series, because I kind of want to talk about some of the behind-the-scenes drama of it all before we talk about anything else.
Kind of got to.
Yeah, I mean, this series has been very well received by the fans. Like, the people that are watching the series love this series, and it's not just people for whom there is nostalgia for the original 90s X-Men anime series, although that's part of it. And I think that's kind of how they sold this show. And I think that element is there. But I think this show is so much more than just the nostalgia show. I honestly think it's one of the best things that Marvel has done in the whole entire idea of the Marvel Cinematic Universe era. But the ratings don't seem to be there.
Is that right?
Yeah, like there's definitely people that are watching this, but there's not, like, right now it is the second most watched Marvel series of the year. Echo has more minutes streamed than
what?
X-Men 97.
Nonsense.
Which I think now, I also think that some of that is the difference between live action and animation.
Absolutely.
I think there are probably certain people that are happy to watch live action superheroes that maybe think animated superheroes are more for kids.
Sure.
I can point out many examples of how this isn't true. We'll just start with the fact that this series isn't necessarily the most kiddie series that ever existed. But, there's a little show called Invincible going on over on Amazon Prime that very much is not for kids. And I think there's this cultural thing of the idea that adults shouldn't watch animated stuff. Which I think I've always thought is garbage, but especially in this case, the storytelling on this is not on a kiddie level. Would you agree?
No, 100%. It, I mean, anime has a long storied history of being both for kids in certain examples and for adults. And just anecdotally, I will say this, I don't typically get self-conscious about posting about shows. I have many of friends and acquaintances that are not in the same kind of geek sphere as we are in, where they love the comic book adaptations and the sci-fi and all of these things that we celebrate and talk about week after week. I've never second-guessed or wondered about what the reaction would be to myself posting about the latest MCU movie. But after I posted about how great X-Men 97 was, there was a part of me that is like, are people looking at this and thinking that I like kids stuff because it's animated? But the subtext and the themes that have always been present in X-Men are really brought to the forefront, and this is the most mature iteration of X-Men we've seen in animated form, and I would say the very best X-Men that we've ever seen portrayed on screen.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that, and I think that over and above that, yeah, I think there is a cultural thing with Western audiences about animation that is not there with Eastern audiences. I think that's
right.
You know, in Japan, it's nothing to read manga or to watch anime like everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I think that's true of a lot of places. I think it's changing in the West, but I don't think it has fully changed yet. And I think that probably has something to do with where the ratings are on this. I think there is something to do with the way that the show was sold initially, and that it was sold as a nostalgia show too. And that it may have felt like you needed to do a lot of homework to be caught up, which I don't think you really have needed in this show at all.
I don't think you would have ever needed to see X-Men to understand the story that was being told here.
No, I don't either. Now another criticism that has come from the other side, from like the more comic book oriented side of the audience, is that they're speed running through stuff. Like we've had storylines that have been done in this show that, and, you know, great example is Inferno, which was, I think, the second or third episode of the season. But I mean, in the comics, this was like a 6-month crossover, and they got through it in an episode. And there's been, you know, some accusations of, we're burning through all these great storylines instead of going into all the detail of it. That is fair.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I can see how there would be so much more to mine from if you did slow it down. As you mentioned, we have two seasons written already, and there was one writer that was behind, kind of leading the charge in writing both the seasons. His name was Bo DeMaio, or DeMaio. And he actually recently departed or was fired from Marvel due to stuff outside of the production of the show. But I love what he did with season one, so I at least know we'll have a good season two. After that, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, and that's kind of the other elephant in the room that I wanted to address, is the fact that what everybody is so loving seems to be this vision that was set forth by Bo DeMaio.
Yeah.
And the fact that right as season one was getting ready to debut, now he had already written overseen all the scripts for season two. He didn't he didn't write every single one himself, but he was the showrunner, so he oversaw all of them. So we know that he is involved in season two. But, you know, he basically came in and said, "All right, here's season two, and I'm so excited that season one's getting ready to debut." And they said, "Oh yeah, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out."
Was he showing his meat on OnlyFans, or was it? Did I misinterpret what happened? What did this guy do to get fired?
That has not officially been said. It has been said that yes, he does have an OnlyFans, and yes, there may have been some discomfort with the fact that he has an OnlyFans. My understanding, and I have not personally checked out his OnlyFans, I have no idea what is or isn't up there.
Callie.
But my understanding is that he didn't have anything that was terribly explicit up there.
Yeah, it's different if he's a user than if he's a creator, but also have to understand the optics working for Disney, that you have to like whatever you do behind closed doors is nobody else's business. But if you're like sharing and reposting content that's very racy or has that sort of, connotation to it, then of course people are going to start looking at you sideways. And we know that Disney is very protective of their brand.
Yeah, I've gotten the impression that he posted a lot of like thirsty photos, but not like outright nudes or anything like that.
Okay.
Yeah, that he's a guy that, you know, is in pretty good shape and is kind of proud of his body. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And also happens to be black and queer.
Okay.
And, you know, that definitely is a viewpoint that I think he has brought to the series. To
one that should have always been there that really does come through more this time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he has talked publicly about how we talked a little bit about this pivotal episode, Remember Me, and let's go ahead and put up a spoiler warning here because we are going to get into details both of this episode and through the end of the series as we continue. So for anybody that's not caught up on X-Men 97, you know, because that's the thing too, we forget that sometimes people don't rush to watch things as soon as they come out, or they might wait till the entire series comes out and then start watching the episodes, which, you know, we just had the last one drop, so certainly a lot of people in that boat right now. But, you know, people don't necessarily consume everything the way we consume it. So there are probably people that are interested in the show that haven't watched every episode yet. So we'll put up the blanket spoiler warning for the entire series of X-Men 97 here. But the episode Remember It, which had to do with the nation of Genosha, which was this haven for mutants, being just utterly destroyed by the Sentinels at the command of who ended up being the major villain of this season, a guy named Bastion. Bo DiMaio talked about how he grew up in Central Florida and he was a regular visitor to the Pulse nightclub. He wasn't there the night that the infamous shootings happened, but that was his, you know, his home base and his safe space. And that's the allegory that he was going for here with this Remember It episode. Because Genosha was very much a haven for the mutants. It was their home place. It was their safe space. They finally had this one place in the world that was safe for mutants. And some guy came in and blew it all away. And there's some pretty powerful parallels there. Because that's
familiar with that.
That's what the Pulse was to the gay community of Central Florida. That was, you know, it was a safe place for them to just go and be themselves. And some guy, you know, came in and destroyed all of that. We'll talk about this some more after the break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. And AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And, you know, Magneto was such a core character in this season of X-Men 97 that definitely seemed appropriate to play the one song that really pays tribute to him more than any, Magneto and Titanium Man by Paul McCartney. Yes, Paul McCartney wrote a song about Magneto. Did you know that?
I had no idea. Yeah. I was listening to the song and didn't even hear Magneto in it. I was going to ask what the correlation was. That's wild.
Yeah, Magneto and Titanium Man, of course, being another famous Marvel villain. He mentions the Crimson Dynamo, and there is another famous Marvel villain. Actually, we might have gotten a glimpse of... Did we get a glimpse of Crimson Dynamo in this episode? We might, in this last episode of X-Men 97. We've got a lot of cameos in this last episode of X-Men 97. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But Jeremy, how did you end up feeling about this series as a whole? We talked a little bit about the behind the scenes stuff, and before we do that, I just want to say one more thing. You know, I think as I said before the break, a lot of us really think that Beau DeMaio is what's been has been the driving force of this series and has made it what we're all loving. We know we've got one more season written by him, but I think we all want to see a lot more of this, especially since we're in the era of 10-episode seasons. I don't know what he did. And I have seen a couple of things on the internet about, you know, cautioning people, hey, you know, before you come running to Beau DeMaio's defense, none of us know what he did. He may have done something really bad. And I can't say that there isn't a track record of myself in the past being so absorbed in enjoying the work of somebody that I've been willing to defend them when it turned out they didn't deserve to be defended. Joss Whedon, excuse me. I'm sorry. You know, with that in mind, I would really like to either see Marvel rehire Beau DeMaio or explain to us why they're not rehiring Beau DeMaio.
And we do got to give a lot of props to him. I think it is also worth mentioning that he had a really great framework to work from, some of the most beloved characters in the history of comic books. So I'm not saying that there's nobody that could come in and knock it out of the park. I don't think he's the only person available, but I do really like what he's done so far. So
at the same time, you know, I don't think posting thirsty photos online is enough of a reason. Personally,
like,
it may be
like, we want your gayness, but we don't want you to be all gay about it. That's kind of the vibe that I get, but you know, maybe it's not that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, we don't know, you know, that's the bottom line here. We can make the assumptions are being made out there in the world. And I can understand why those assumptions are being made. And yeah, Disney is a company with a family reputation, blah, 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 blah. But Disney also does a lot of other stuff too. Not everything Disney does is family oriented. Yeah, it's on Disney Plus, but you know what? Hulu's on Disney Plus right now also.
So is Poor Things and tons of other stuff.
Yeah,
so,
If you're not going to rehire him, I want to know what your justification is. I want to know, and I recognize we're not owed that. I recognize that, you know, personnel matters are private matters, but this is not the same thing as like a dude losing his job at the grocery store.
Yeah, that's fair. I loved it. I loved it. Like I spoiler warning back up. I was expecting a great X-Men series. There were moments a couple of episodes back where a very iconic character, Captain America, shows up in the series. And then here we are at the end, and we get so many cameos, as you'd alluded to. I mean, everybody from Cloak and Dagger to,
that was so
Silver
cool.
Sable, or Silver Samurai.
Silver Samurai, we got Cap and Iron Man and Doctor Strange and Daredevil and Spider-Man. And that was another thing that was feeding this, another thing that with this series that has gotten people excited about the 90s Marvel animation again. And there's been a lot of people calling for a Spider-Man 98 series. Because in fairness, the Spider-Man animated series in the 90s did end on a bit of a cliffhanger. And we kind of got a little bit of a resolution to that with the cameo of Peter Parker and Mary Jane in the final episode of season one of X-Men 97, because that was where we left off. Spider-Man went off into the multiverse to find Mary Jane, who'd been lost in the multiverse. So,
apparently, I've never seen that.
Apparently he found her at some point because they were cameoing together in this episode.
And so on the multiversal note, the fact that Doctor Strange has his powers at the time frame that he does in this season indicates that this is going on in another timeline, in another kind of universe. I mean, that, at least that's the way that I interpreted it.
Oh, yeah,
but
for
it,
sure.
It pulled it off really well.
I saw somebody online complaining, the Avengers are just going to stand there and watch TV? And I was like, hold on a second here. This is not the movie Avengers. They don't just go do whatever they want. The Avengers in this era, and as depicted in both comics and in animation, were operating under government oversight. They had oversight from both the U.S. government and the U.N. They were obviously there. Iron Man and Captain America are obviously there with the president as a U.N. Security Council vote is being taken place on what to do. They were constrained by that. And yeah, Cap was arguing against it, but and in the end, they had people they answered to. So it's not, there are people that are going to look at this like, well, that's not the event. Well, no, that's not the Avengers that you saw in the movies. Avengers that you saw in the movies are not the only Avengers.
To lend a little credence to the criticism that they do kind of burn through a lot, we see a bunch of major villains throughout the series, throughout the season, that could have been big bads in their own respective seasons, from Mr. Sinister to Mr. Sinister in particular. And then we get a little glimpse of Apocalypse at the end. I don't know exactly where we're going with all of that, but to see Mr. Sinister as a henchman under Bastion, so abruptly kind of plan foiled in the season is like, I always really liked that character. So I do kind of understand that idea. We get a little bit of the Phoenix, kind of Phoenix Force stuff in here that could have been expanded upon. And it probably was in the original X-Men 90s series. And I'm just not remembering it, but like overall, I just thought, they nailed it, dude. The relationship between Scott and Cable and Jean, and like a lot of the relationship stuff worked really well. The Charles and Magneto stuff, they really hammered home. A lot of the mutants get their own little moments in it. And I thought they understood the characters very, very well. The family dynamic, all of that stuff is there. Like, it is an animated series, but it is not something that we should kind of shove aside or say isn't credible as being like masterful storytelling because of it.
Virtually everybody got a moment to shine, which with, mm-hmm. with a team show like this is hard to do, but especially with only 10 episodes. But even if they didn't get a spotlight episode, they had things to do in various episodes where they had their moment. The moment in this one where Jubilee just steps up and goes Super Saiyan.
And, yeah, that was cool.
You know, that was just such a cool moment for that character. The Sentinel showing up at the end, and it turns out that it's that Beast has hijacked the Sentinel and has showed up with the X-Men to save the day. Such a cool moment. You know, we got a lot of those. You know, you can argue maybe there's one or two characters that got a little bit of a short shrift. We didn't see Morph get a whole lot to do. Overall, and then we end big, man. We end on a massive cliffhanger and a to be continued. We do know we're getting a second season. Your mention of Apocalypse, we know Apocalypse is obviously going to be a major focus next season. So that doesn't bother me that we kind of had just a quick glimpse of him, because that's clearly where we're going from here.
Yep.
You know, we don't know what's happening with Wolverine. Wolverine had the adamantium sucked out of his skeleton in the penultimate episode of the season.
They do this awesome little kind of splash panel, very evocative of things that have been in the 90s X-Men comic series, where Magneto's behind him and it's like super detailed, and Wolverine's getting the adamantium like pulled out of the skin by the magnet. It's a super cool looking image.
We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branchless on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. I just love that the fact that Marvel Entertainment, of course, posted that. That's, of course, the opening credits music from X-Men 97, which we all know and love. And the caption under the on the YouTube video for that is, "Skip intro button, never heard of her."
Yeah, it's accurate.
Because you can't. There's no reason to ever skip the intro on the X-Men. And that was true of the original series. When that first showed up on, I remember when that series first showed up on streaming. Watching it on streaming, rewatching it on streaming, and seeing that, and actually taking a screenshot of the skip intro button and posting it on social media, saying, "Who would ever?" Because the theme song's such a banger. But I think that's become even more true with this new series, because those credits are different in just about every episode, and there are things mm-hmm. in those credits that are clues to what's going on in the show. And if you watch, like, there's stuff that changes in every episode. Of course, the lineup of the X-Men changes as different characters come and go. But the characters are given priority. And the other thing that they did this season that I really liked is, in the original series, every episode, the previously on X-Men that you got at the beginning of, where they give you, you know, like the 2 seconds of, you know, here's what was in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
That was always Cyclops' voice in the original series. In this series, it changes every episode, and the character that is giving the previously on X-Men is the character that is going to have the most to do in this episode.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And so we've gotten to see, you know, Storm do it in an episode and Jubilee do it in an episode. I think we saw Magneto do it twice.
Who got the most shine in this season?
I think it's in terms of, you know, the most character development.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's probably a very close tie between Magneto and Cyclops.
It's always Magneto to me. He is the most compelling character in the X-Men, and always has been. And this season, I thought, really highlighted what makes him such a great and conflicted and ultimately sympathetic character.
Well, and I think that's what it all came down to in this last episode. If you really look at it, so much of this last episode, for a show that, you know, you think of animation, you think it's, oh, we got to keep everybody's attention and we got to move fast and there's got to be a lot of action. A lot of what happens in this episode hinges on about a good third of the episode being nothing but Xavier and Magneto talking to each other.
Do you feel like they were in love?
I not in the romantic sense. Do I think they love each other?
It was very coded as in the romantic sense season, and I don't hate it.
I think it can be read that way, and I don't think there's anything wrong with reading it that way, but I think it's more of a we're family, we're brothers kind of love.
Sure.
I do wonder more if, in terms of that kind of thing, whether there wasn't a revelation that Morph is in love with Wolverine.
Oh, that definitely that.
Yeah, I mean, that could be. You know, they at one point transform into Jean Grey, and it can be read as they're doing it to encourage Logan to survive. But it can also be read as a confession of love.
Yeah, that's how I took it, and that's a really interesting kind of development that happened over this season, is this relationship I've never seen depicted between Wolverine and Morph and the way that they interacted with each other. And yeah. I like that. I think if Magneto got the most shine, they have the most work to do to make me like Logan in this series, which is wild because he was always my favorite as a kid. And coming back to it all these years later, I'm like, what did I ever like about this guy?
Well, they have not made him the central character in this season, which I'm glad for, because there's been a lot of Wolverine being the central character.
Absolutely.
And there's been, and we're going to get some more of it in you know, Deadpool and Wolverine later this year. You could say the same about Magneto to an extent, but I don't think that Magneto was the only central character in this season. And I think, you know, we, like I said, we saw a lot of development for Cyclops here. And made Cyclops a more interesting character. Because sometimes Cyclops, you know, there's a point where Morph calls him the most boring man in the world.
Yeah, they play with that.
I don't think he was that in this season, and I appreciate
not at
that.
All.
We got, you know, some other things. You know, Storm definitely got some good development. Jean got some good development. Jubilee had her, you know, kind of feature episode, and then had, you know, a few other things that were here and there in episodes. Of course, what happens to Gambit and Rogue is obviously
Rogue went dark in this season in a way that I was not expecting.
Well, and then, you know, of course, Gambit, you know, I got to admit, Gambit's never been my favorite X-Man. But that episode where he bows out and remember it, and, you know, where he, you know, sacrifices himself for everyone. How can you not feel watching that episode?
Yeah, there was a couple moments, Julio, throughout the season where I was surprised that it was like tugging on my heartstrings in the way that it did. And it was the kind of mind melding of Charles and Eric, Magneto and Professor X in that last episode when they were kind of drowning in the water, and the way that that was symbolic. I thought that was a really touching scene. And then the scene between Cable and his parents, when Cable was just kind of sitting there in that diner, like, those were really emotionally resonant moments.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And then, you know, as he is my favorite Marvel character, period, just so glad to see Nightcrawler finally getting his justified place in the X-Men, you know, actually being added to the opening credits and becoming a team member, which he wasn't in the original series, but he was in the comics for years and years and years. And getting to see every side of the character. Like, there tends to be, in a lot of adaptations with this character, they want to tend to focus on the religiosity of the character.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the least interesting thing about Nightcrawler. Like, it's interesting, and that's fine. But what I like about Nightcrawler is the swashbuckling side. That, you know, here's this guy that, you know, looks scary, but when you get to know him, he's not only like a really sweet guy, he's like the Errol Flynn romantic lead. You know, he's the guy that gets into the sword fights and is always ready to save the damsel. And I love that side of Nightcrawler. And we got to see that side of Nightcrawler in this season a lot. The scene with he and Jubilee teleporting in and out in this last episode, awesome, as they were attacking Bastion. It was just so well done. Just getting to see Kurt's powers used strategically in a way that we rarely get. Like, we got a little bit of it when he showed up in X2, like that opening sequence where he's, you know, attacking the president. Yeah, that was a great use of Nightcrawler's powers. But then the use of the character in that movie was not the greatest. And, you know, no slight to Alan Cumming. He was a great choice to portray the character, but they chose to focus on, you know, he's very religious and he has all this guilt and yada yada. Nightcrawler doesn't really have a whole lot of guilt. He's very religious, but he's not very guilty. And, you know, he's a hard character to get right. And I felt like this series is getting him right. And I am very much looking forward to seeing more with him.
You know, I was never familiar with Bastion until this season of the X-Men, like, never even heard of him as a character. Does he traditionally look like Archangel?
No, that was kind of different, but, you know, you want to talk about a character that got a glow up in this series in terms of improving on the comics. Bastion is definitely a vast improvement on the comics. In the comics, he's just, even though it's kind of a similar storyline, he's a terrible character.
Oh,
and
okay.
He's convoluted as heck, and they really just kind of streamlined him and made him not only cool, but kind of at the end, almost a little bit sympathetic.
Yeah.
Which, you know, could you have imagined at the end of Remember It that you would feel sympathy for the guy that killed Gambit?
Yeah, I mean, that's what X-Men really excels at, because when you have this systemic persecution of people for whatever reason, there's always a part, and it's not justified. It's not the hashtag Magneto is right, but it's like, we get it. We understand.
But, you know, in some ways, Magneto was right.
Yeah. Maggie was right a lot of times.
And was repeatedly proven right throughout the course of the series. So there's a balance there. And that's the thing that when you're weighing Xavier versus Magneto, neither one of them is completely right and neither one of them is completely wrong.
Xavier is just the forever idealist, and in a utopian society, his way is the way. But when humanity proves Magneto right over and over and over and over again, it's really hard to see a world where Charles's vision of the future is actually able to be realized.
Well, and we've got an interesting future ahead of us because we've got part of the X-Men lost in the past, part of the X-Men lost in the future, a few characters that we don't know where they are. And we have this little bit of a cliffhanger with that and with Bishop showing back up after disappearing for several episodes and working with Forge to get the X-Men back. And as he said, this is not our first time at the X-Men are dead rodeo. The X-Men aren't, as we know, aren't dead, but it's going to be interesting to see how they all come back together and what storylines we get into next season. I am super stoked for next season. I don't know how far we are from it, but we will definitely be talking about it when it comes. We got to go for now. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.